Are we ready to open next month?
I think so.
You think so?
Well, it's complicated. Fire protection, first aid supplies, uniforms, safety training, mat services. Oh, and restroom supplies.
So uncomplicated. Call CentOS. They'll handle all of it.
Wow. One company can handle all that? That's not very complicated.
So, you'll be ready?
Oh, we'll be ready.
Oh, I'm ready!
Learn how CentOS can help you get ready for the workday. Visit CentOS.com.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. You can also follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. And remember, guys, this edition of Locked On Eagles is brought to you by XBet. When you join xbet.ag today, use the promo code XBET. You'll get up to a 100% bonus on your first deposit. Now, as always, I am joined by Benjamin Solak, my co-host, Captain My Captain, Ben.
Wow. We had Shel Silverstein on that one.
Yeah, exactly. Look, follow his work at Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. Also follow him at Benjamin Solak on Twitter. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
It was Walt Whitman, not Shel Silverstein. Shit. I totally, the second I said that, I go, that's a different alliterative poet. It's WW, not SS. I'm doing well, my man. I'm doing well.
For this edition of Locked On Eagles, we are going to dig into some interesting Twitter questions. We use the hashtag Locked On Eagles to call Twitter for some questions. Let's kick it off, Ben. What do you think?
Yeah, this is karma coming your way, because every time any podcast says, oh, Twitter mailbag, Mike sends them absurd questions. And so definitely the universe has been waiting to repay you, man.
This is it right here. But I did find a question that I really liked. We'll get into that in a sec. So, okay, first question from Eagles Talk at DKGaming01. Do you think Jones's tweet today, talking about Sidney Jones, do you think Jones's tweet today is him starting to practice week 7?
Did you see the tweet?
No, I haven't yet.
All right. So the tweet is quite literally this. It's the number 7 and then a space. And then a big red exclamation point and then a space. And then a big red exclamation point and then a space. And then a big red exclamation point and that's it. So it's just 7, 3 exclamation points. With no context. Sent now the thing is, at my time, it was sent at 6 a.m. So where Sydney is, because I'm at Central Standard Time, it was sent around 7 a.m., which I think is the most likely situation here, right? Right. He was just like, man, I'm awake at 7. It's what's on the clock right now, guys. It's the 7. Of course, Philadelphia Eagle fans jumped for the week 7 conclusion as Sidney Jones is on the NFI list for 6 weeks. So the earliest eligible return for Sidney is week 7.
Okay. I'm not buying that. Athletes do these subtle trolls all the time. And I'm going to say that's a troll. So no. No, that is not week 7.
Here's my thing. I don't think after week 4 Sidney would know he was coming back week 7. I don't think they would have that timetabled that so much in stone that Sidney would know and we wouldn't have any inklings through the press. That's my thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, so next question from Corey Next Door at It's Ya Boy CK. What's the running back situation going to be next year? Do they get rid of Pumphrey, draft a new back, or re-sign Blunt? I mean, it's so early, dude. Like, I don't have an affirmative take on that. I think we end up drafting a running back. I think day 2 would be a good spot for that. But then you also got to think, you know, we got to draft an offensive tackle as well. And look, we don't.
We got to get that. We got to get that next Kareem Hunt up in there, man. Okay. Akrom Wadley, Mike's peek at a prospect from yesterday, is being touted as the next Kareem Hunt 4 weeks into the NFL season.
This is crazy. I saw this on Twitter and it blew my mind. Akrom Wadley was being touted by somebody as the next Kareem Hunt. Can we not act like day 2 running backs are like super rare? LeSean McCoy, Kareem Hunt, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Jay Ajayi, Devonta Freeman. Like, I could go on and on and on. Day 2 running backs are the thing. They're
Dalvin Cook, the second leading rusher, also found on day 2.
Who unfortunately just tore his ACL, but yeah, he was producing big time before that. So yeah, dude, that's ridiculous. So what do you think of this? Do you think they get rid of Pumphrey or draft a new back or resign Blunt to any of those?
Like you said, it's early. Obviously, it's kind of especially because we're draft guys, we tend to want to think about this. Re-sign Blunt. I talked about this a little bit on my spot with the Philadelphia Sports Table, which came out yesterday. But the only way I see Blunt coming back in, like, with any sort of, you know, seriousness or You know, the only way I think that's a reality is if the Eagles get very close to the Super Bowl this year and then don't win it, because I think anywhere Blount goes right now, it's going to be to add power to a running back stable on a team that could threaten the Super Bowl, right? And that's where I think, because Blount's career is kind of waning down. Obviously, he already has Super Bowl rings, but that's still kind of, you know, Chris Long is similar in that sense that he signed with us to make us a competitor because he thinks that we have a legitimate chance, and that's the only way they would stay extra years. Pumphrey will be kept because he's a fourth-round pick from last year who had a hamstring injury during training camp. Chill out. I mean, this organization kept Nelson Aguilar and Marcus Smith for a very long period of time through thick and thin. So, like, let's give Pumphrey a breath. And yeah, a running back will be drafted. So two for sure will occur. Three, maybe not.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Okay, so we will move on to our next question from Mr. McGiblets
Esquire. Don't get the end. Don't forget the end there, man. Mr. McGiblets Esquire.
At KMJR_04, could you talk about RPO in the Eagles' offensive scheme? And look, we saw some of this. They went to it about three times in a row when they did that inside zone, hit the backside slant, whatnot. But Ben, other than like the ghost motion where they'll motion a running back out to the flats and set up some blocks, is there anything else that you've noticed that we run with any kind of consistency?
Without going deep into the tape, I can't say with any consistency. What I'll tell you is this. Firstly, you know, The Ringer came out with an article on RPOs this year saying, oh, here's the college trick that'll, you know, not so complex idea that'll be pervading NFL offenses and fooling defenses. They came out with that this year. About 5 years ago was when RPOs kind of burst onto the scene. Teams like Northern Illinois were running RPOs since, you know, the mid-2000s. And, you know, as the NFL does, as just football in general does, ideas are picked and chosen and then they're grown on. And there's a really cool article on Joe Moorhead, who was the head coach of Fordham and is now the offensive coordinator at Penn State, who really brought this RPO idea to a national light in his time at Fordham. And that's really that original kind of RPO, end quote, because it wasn't exactly an RPO, but that original play that was kind of made in Fordham that was brought up in the article was used by the Kansas City Chiefs multiple times in week two against the Philadelphia Eagles, right? Which is really cool. And so the role of RPO in Philadelphia's offense, given that it's something that the NFL is starting to integrate because they've seen it, the level of college success that's been had with RPO teams, it's not something that it's not a staple yet. But yeah, I mean, you can, anytime you see, you know, Carson Wentz short right to Zach Ertz for 9 yards, go check out that play because it's very likely that was a run pass option.
Guys, I found something that you guys will love. XBet.ag. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it. I mean, I bet on sports, so I figured, what the hell? I'll give this a shot. XBet.ag has everything. It's like Vegas in your pocket. With their mobile website, I just log on and bet on any game I want right on my phone. You gotta check them out. Their website is clean and easy to use, and their graphics are sick. They even offer live in-game wagering, turning your fourth quarter faith and emotional overtimes into heart-pounding, cash-stacking opportunities. When you join XBet.ag today, use the promo code XBET, and you'll get up to 100% bonus on your first deposit. Just don't be the guy saying, I would have won big. Join XBET now and start winning today. Plus, if you refer a friend, you'll get up to 100% of their first deposit too. So bring the squad and build the bank at XBET.ag, the newest and most exciting betting platform on the planet. Don't forget to use the code XBET to claim your bonus. All right, next question from Bill Riquette. Is that right? Bill Riquette?
We'll find out next week, man.
Yeah, we will, actually. Bill is the Locked On Panthers guy, so check him out. He does excellent work. And he asked, that's at Bill_Riquette, what makes the 3-1 start different than last year's? Can they actually sustain their success this time? For what it's worth, he says, I think they can.
Yeah, this is really interesting because I just dropped a post on Locked On Eagles about Carson Wentz maintaining his success from the first quarter of the year to the final three quarters. Obviously, you know, he had those first four games of the season last year, 3-1 with a tough loss to the Lions there at the end. But, you know, four very good games for Carson, and then the Lane Johnson suspension, defenses started to figure stuff out. He kind of fell off a cliff statistically, and also the Eagles followed him off of that cliff. Obviously, the performance of Wentz greatly correlated to the success of the Philadelphia Eagles. What makes this 3-1 start different than last year's? I think one of the biggest things is last year we had a 3-1 start and then we started losing people. This year we lost people and had a 3-1 start, you know, and hopefully as we get folks back, we've talked a lot about injuries on this pod, as we get folks back, that'll only bolster us. That's number one. Number two, you've got this year a non-rookie head coach and a non-rookie quarterback. You've got 2 second-years, which I think is huge simply because, and you know, this is a common phrase thrown around, but they've been here before now. You know, you get those first year kind of butterflies are out of the way. You know, we've already seen from Doug Peterson less of those kind of first year mistakes that we perhaps accused him of during his time. And so I think that there's definitely been an improvement there in that regard. The last thing that I'll say that I think makes the 3-1 start very different is there's no longer a week 4 bye week. I think that week 4 bye week is incredibly difficult last year when you had to ask a young team to play 13 games in a row without a break to end off the season. And that schedule, same as last year, the schedule last year got a little bit tougher there at the end. But I think this year, bye week a lot more nicely situated in the middle of the season helps a lot as well.
I think this team is a team that is starting to figure out what they do well and how they win. And I think that's really important. The run game going off for us is extremely important. We can't have Carson Wentz throwing 49 times a game like we've had before. If we get this running game and we stick to it, man, it's a big difference. And I think that's part of it too. And the defense is coming together even despite, you know, a lot of their flaws. So, okay, we'll go to the next one. And this is a personal favorite of mine. If you guys
don't... I'm gonna go like get some food or something. I'll come back when you're done.
I could talk about history for conservatively 7 hours most likely. So this question is from my buddy Ryan Kieran.
Good follow.
Yeah, really good follow. Does nice work for settingedge.com. So you can follow him at Ryan_KEIRAN. He asks player comps for Nero, Julius Caesar, and Augustus. Okay. I want to start with Augustus. Obvious reasons, since that's my teeny tiny baby boy's namesake.
Obvious, yeah.
So Julius Caesar's adopted son, right? So his name wasn't originally Augustus. It was originally Gaius Octavius. Then he was adopted and he changed it to Gaius Julius Caesar Octavianus, right? So also known as Octavian. Now, he was awarded with several titles, Pontificus Maximus, which is the chief priest, Imperator.
I got Pontificus Maximus last week, so yeah, totally.
Imperator, the commander-in-chief, also Princeps, the first citizen, Divi Filius, the son of God. Now, where am I going with this? Nowhere yet.
I think you're just making up words, is my current opinion, but I'm chilling.
Yeah, I just think it's cool. So one last one. The Senate actually gave him the name Augustus, which means revered one, right? So keep in mind, despite all these titles that Augustus has, he never referred to himself in a dictatorial sense. He never let it go to his head, which takes a sense of humility, right? And that was also represented in his modest living quarters. Okay. Now, if there were one quarterback that you could think of that we might call the revered one on this show who also epitomizes humility, is there any other name to consider? Then I'll let you take a stab at it. Go for it.
Right. So what you're going to do is you're going to flex on me with Roman knowledge and then make me give the player comp for Augustus. I mean, from the description, I'm going Carson.
Yep. That's right.
All right.
Yeah. Good start. The first emperor of Philadelphia, our commander in chief, our Pontificus Maximus. I mean, who else could it be, Ben? It's obviously Carson Wentz. Okay.
Pontificus Maximus.
I mean, you've heard of Nero, right? He was a pretty bad dude.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Violin, Rome's burning.
Yep. It was a liar, whatever.
I know some things. Like maybe 3.
Okay. So let's start with some quick facts to set the stage here. So when looking for a comp for Nero, you have to understand that you're dealing with a perverted, paranoid, murderous, and extremely young emperor here. Okay, the type of guy that would execute his own mother. I don't know if I can find an NFL comparison for that.
I hope you can't. Yeah.
Well, not at quarterback, but watch this. Watch what I do here. Okay. Nero divorced and banished his wife, Octavia, then had her executed anyway. He then married Sabina. Their daughter died at a very young age. Then she got pregnant again, and she died after Nero kicked her in the belly. Do you see where I'm going with this yet, Ben?
No. There's no parallel to that.
There's a certain wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs that pled guilty.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah.
That's actually, like, impressively well done as far as the comp goes. Speaking of which, dude, Chiefs right now, 33 seconds left, 20-20. And Alex Smith just hit Albert Wilson for 37 yards, balls on the Washington 34. They just cut Cairo Santos, so Chiefs got to hit this game winner to make Washington 2-2. But yeah. You go back to your thing. I'll keep on paying attention to the football game.
Yeah, we're recording during this Monday night game, so okay. Let me get more into it here. So in case you don't know Tyreek Hill, why I'm making that comp, he did the following to his pregnant girlfriend after she received text messages that he was hitting on high schoolers, which is a very narrow thing to do. He punched her in the face, punched her in the stomach, and he choked her. He pled guilty to all of this. Therefore, my NFL Nero comp is the pile of rancid swine known as Tyreek Hill. Okay, so last one, Julius Caesar. Ben, I'll ask you, do you have anyone that comes to mind with Julius Caesar?
Bill Belichick.
Ooh, I like that. And you're right on the right path here. Okay, so for Julius Caesar, the first thing that comes to mind is he was a bit of a late bloomer, right? At one point in his life, he wept at the thought of not accomplishing what Alexander the Great had accomplished.
So Brady? So is this Brady? Oh, man, I'm sorry if I spoiled it, but I got it. All right, cool.
You son of a... So,
all right, do your thing. It's my bad.
Okay. Obviously, they were a different situation. Alexander is basically a historical rich kid, and Julius Caesar had to work within the confines of a post-Sulla Roman political system that discouraged fast risers and put restrictions on positions based on age. So we got to go with someone that wasn't anointed from a young age, that came to prominence back with very little hype as Caesar's family line was also struggling with a dwindling legacy. And then you consider that Caesar's trademark was his speed in which he operated, which took many opponents in the political arena and on the battlefield by surprise. Ben, late bloomer that is able to operate at lightning speed with a fast offense. Tom Brady, obviously, you got it right.
Yep.
Played in a two-quarterback system at Michigan, was never really the starter there, sat behind Bledsoe, and then you talk about a lightning-fast offense. I don't know if you remember this, but when Belichick met with Chip Kelly in the offseason in 2002, while Chip was still at Oregon, and they unleashed that furious no-huddle in 2012, and not only did they run a no-huddle offense, but they also installed 6 plays a game that they had a one-word call for. And that one word gave everybody in the formation blocking scheme, snap count, route concepts, direction to run plays, a set of alerts and side adjustments, formation shifts. One word, and they operated it brilliantly. That's peak Caesar. That's peak Tom Brady, my friend.
This is so sad because I'm not this knowledgeable about the thing about which I'm most knowledgeable, which is football. And you know this much about like all this incredible history. It's amazing you can feel that sort of a question. You should be very proud.
Well, thank you, Ben. And I will take that with no hint of sarcasm whatsoever. Just going to breeze
past. There's none. No, there's none. That's awesome. I'm like very legitimately, man. I'm beyond impressed.
All right, less serious question. From our friend Mark Schofield from Locked On Patriots and also Inside the Pylon, technically my boss. You can follow him at Mark Schofield. How well can Carson Wentz throw an incendiary grenade, CC, at Michael J. Kist? Look, I tend to play some video games on Friday nights when I'm having some adult beverages with Mark Schofield, and we tend to play Battlefield 1. So me and him are in a foxhole, and I have this video up on my timeline if you seek it out. We're in a foxhole, we're in a vicious firefight, and I throw an incendiary grenade after killing a guy, and then he gets the idea to throw one too, and he banks it off the side of the foxhole, comes right back in at us. I gotta jump out, get shot up immediately. So I'm gonna say that Carson Wentz throws a better incendiary grenade than Mark Schofield. What do you think, Ben?
I don't play video games. I don't know if that dude, whenever folks are talking like, oh, like Madden or FIFA or whatever Battlefield is, I'm always just like, man, I didn't have any of that stuff like growing up or anything, so I don't play video games. How far can Carson Wentz throw an incendiary grenade? All right, well, you're throwing a grenade far away, right? Because you don't want it to blow up, unless you're Mark. You don't want it to blow up on you. And when Carson Wentz throws the ball far, he usually throws it very poorly. So I'm going to say that Carson Wentz does not throw incendiary grenades very well. This is the extent of my video game analysis.
Beautiful. Okay. Next question from Nicole at CerealLens0MNIAC. Sturgis, when healthy or Elliot, trade value for either?
It says Serial Insomniac just with a zero instead of an O.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for that.
No problem. I recognize the word insomnia, man. That's near and dear to my heart.
That's your brand.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Severe insomnia is me. Sturgis went healthier, Elliot, trade value for either. Right now, you ride the hot foot, no question. If Jake Elliott keeps hitting 4 40-plus yard field goals a game, there's no way you exchange him for any kicker. No, I don't care who it is. You know, David Akers Reincarnate isn't going to happen. And then as far as trade value you're going to get for Caleb Sturgis, the only way you get trade value for a kicker, in my opinion, is going to be in the event that a team incurs an injury to their kicker and they're competitive and they don't like the what's on the market, and even then it's going to be quite minimal because you're training a kicker, obviously.
We're talking like seventh rounder or like a trade for a long snapper, right?
Right. Well, I mean, Dorenbos's trade, which obviously never went through because of, you know, the heart condition with John, but that was only for a seventh rounder in 2019, not even 2018. Mm-hmm. I think that Cairo Santos being on the free agent market right now, who obviously he's injured as well, but I think that hurts Sturgis's trade value, obviously, because you can go and you can get your own, you know, veteran there if you want to. Right. But the kicker market was poor enough for Philadelphia that they wanted to, they were willing to go get Jake Elliott off of a practice squad because they didn't like who was available. Either way, it's going to be a very minimal market for Sturgis, but there's no way you're getting rid of Elliott, if you ask me.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Okay, so we're going to lump these next two questions in together as we close this out. And we are going to watch the Kansas City Chiefs try to put away the Washington Redskins with this last second field goal, and the Redskins lose. Yes. Redskins
wonderful.
Are 2-2. Oh, that's beautiful. Okay. All right. So last, contain your excitement, Ben. We have a job to do. We have listeners that demand that we answer their questions.
I'm sorry. I'll gear it down. That's my bad.
No. Okay. Great to see the Redskins lose. This is from Jesse Fritch at Calhoun Lambeau, our boy. He says, bring back Mac Hollins. I'll listen to your answer off the air. Thanks. And then the last one from Stephen Rockman at the Stephen A. So are you still trying to resign Alshon in the offseason? Ben, two wide receivers to talk about. What happened to Mac Hollins? And, I mean, we can't make a decision on Alshon yet, right?
I know which direction I'm leaning right now on Alshon. Obviously, 12 games left. But as we talked about in the last pod, you know, he's not doing enough for me right now to warrant the $14 million that he earned this year in his 1 year deal. And, you know, obviously that number would go down a little bit with a multi-year deal, but I'm kind of on the fence for a $12, $11 million deal. Now, that being said, with Mac Hollins, I think one of the moves I would love to see from Philadelphia's offense moving forward, a little bit of a tweak, is less targets for Torrey Smith and more targets for Nelson Agholor and Mac Hollins, not only because Torrey's really struggling to catch the football, but also because you're more likely to have, I think, both Agholor and Mac Hollins on the roster next year than you are likely to have Torrey Smith. Torrey Smith, whose contract is incredibly easy to, it's incredibly easy to get out of that contract. So when it comes to looking at Mac's role in this offense, obviously he plays more of a Jeffrey style of game than Torrey Smith does. But I think the more that you incorporate Nelson Agholor on the boundary and the more that you let Agholor take some of the downfield reps because he's got some pretty significant speed, I think that opens up the slot to use Mac Hollins more. So that's the direction I'd like to see the Eagles offense head.
Steven, if you want to hear our thoughts on Alshon from yesterday, go back to yesterday's episode and check that out. That's in the recap of the Chargers-Eagles game. Remember, today's edition of Locked On Eagles was brought to you by xbet.ag. Use promo code xbet and you'll get up to 100% bonus on your first deposit. Ben, you want to let the gentle listeners know what we have on tap for tomorrow.
I'm excited. So, Blake Allen Murphy of Revenge of the Birds, which is the SB Nation site for the Cardinals, should be joining us for Wednesday's pod, talking a little bit about what to expect from the Cardinals. We love to do those crossover shows on Wednesday. Is that win official?
Yeah. The Justin Houston just took a fumble back on the last gasp by the Redskins back for a touchdown. So it's now 29-20.
Insult to injury to end the game.
And then a sweet stiff arm. Yeah.
Oh, go get him. Hey, I mean, Justin Houston's been having a season, man.
Yeah, dude, for real. So Blake Allen Murphy, man. We're having him on tomorrow, right?
So BAM, BAM will be up here on Wednesday, which is nice. Thursday pod, we're going to be doing a quarter check-in with not only the NFC East, but just with the rest of the league. You know, you've got more and more people turning their eyes to Philadelphia and saying a top-tier contender in the NFC. Just period. And so we're going to want to take a look not only at what to expect from the Redskins, the Cowboys, and the Giants, but also looking towards the Falcons, looking towards the Packers, the Seahawks, the Vikings, the Lions, trying to figure out who's going to be coming out of these divisions that the Eagles could potentially be seeing in January. So we'll be taking a look at the full NFL as well. Friday, we're previewing that matchup with the Cardinals, baby. It's going to be another great week.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this week, and I'm really excited for all the new listeners that we've had. We are breaking records this week so far, which is amazing for all the new listeners. Here's what you got to do. Go to our iTunes page, Locked On Eagles, rate, review. Make sure you leave a review and make sure that you leave your Twitter handle in there. And that puts you in a contest that we do every week to win a free PFF Edge subscription. We do that because we love you guys.
Woo.
All right. Yes, remember, keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.